always got utter belief in him.
And somehow she's found the acceleration.
He's ahead of the lights. He's ahead of the lights. He stayed ahead of the lights. Jakob Ingebrigtsen, yet another world best 2,000 meters. Super impressive. 4:43.13. Josh Kerr, I hope you were watching, because I really believe, I am believing that Jakob is sick of worlds. Nobody's beating that guy 100%. Are you guys in agreement or not? Sherika Jackson, 21:48. Kenny Barrick, 1979. Sajadi Wednesday, 1:43.6. Addie Wiley breaks Jenny Simpson's U.S. collegiate record in the women's 1500 as Laura Muir returns to form. 3:55.34. All of that and more on this live Memorial Vandaam Brussels Diamond League recap show. This is Let's Run, co-founder Robert Johnson, joined as always by Ace Step writer Jonathan Galton, as well as genetic equal, but much faster twin brother, Weldon Johnson. Guys, last regular season meets in the books. What'd you think?
Well, I think the first thing you need to do is move your microphone back a little bit, Robert. You're going to drive me and all our listeners insane. But it was pretty much what I expected. I thought a lot of the events wouldn't be all that compelling, and a number of them weren't very compelling. But I thought Jakob would give... I didn't think Jakob would get the world record, so... In that respect, it was better than I thought. And Robert, you said it's world best. I know this is a weird distance, 2,000 meters. It's actually a world record. The World Athletics considers this a world record distance for some reason. The 2 mile is not. I don't really understand the rationale. But this was a world record. Took down Hisham El-Gharouj's mark of 4:44.79 from 1999. So that was fun. Sherika Jackson gave the 200-meter world record a real scare. I mean, if you just removed the clock from that race and had me go on the eye test, margin of victory, I would have said that was a world record. And honestly, the only person who's run faster than what she ran tonight is either Sherika Jackson, who lost 2 Worlds Finals, or Flojo. So, you know, it's pretty damn impressive what she did there tonight. I'm shocked that Nozomi Tanaka's Japanese record didn't get any mention from Robert. This is one of his favorite runners in the world. She's had a ridiculous year, Robert. She's gone from 14:58 to 14:29 in 2023 at the age of 24. It's kind of a massive breakthrough. So I assumed you'd be all over that, but maybe not. And then, yeah, Addie Wiley in the 1500. I mean, it wasn't a surprise given she ran 1:57 on Monday, but 3:59 by a 19-year-old American is just ridiculous, especially one training at an NAIA school. So we'll get into that as well. I had fun with this one. It was a, you know, nice little appetizer for the final next week in Eugene, which I do expect to be tremendous.
The meet is now over, people. I don't know how many minute delay I'm on, but Mondo has just missed his third world record attempt. Came very close. They're now showing the performance of the day. The performance of the day, according to the Diamond League, Jakob Ingebrigtsen's very impressive world record.
All right, let's talk about the world record that did happen. I'm kind of glad that Sherika didn't get it in the women's 200 record, because I was literally in the pickup line for kindergarten, and they tell you to put your phones away, and I had it between my legs, and I was looking at it. I'm like, wow, she's way ahead. That looks good. I thought the same thing as you, John. But anyways, this 2000 world record was super impressive. Can you pull up the official splits, John? Like, it just seemed like they're like 57 for the first lap. I was driving to pick up kindergarten when this one went off, and I quickly do in my head. I'm like, okay, the record's it's 4:44. So you've got to be more than 15 seconds under over 5 laps. So it's about 57 seconds per lap. Okay, good. So I did the quick math and I'm like, okay, they're doing good. But then they're like, with a lap to go, they're like, we want to see 3:48. He's a little bit behind the lights. And then right, it was like basically 3:48 flat at 1,600 meters. Is that what the FAT shows?
So that there are no official results. I don't understand. Like, why isn't this standardized across the Diamond League? I know this sounds like a 1% complaint, but this is the professional circuit for track and field. It's the highest level of track and field in the world. And we know we have the technology to give 400-meter splits. for every race, and they it's done in a haphazard fashion. This is a world record attempt with one of the most famous runners in the world. It's just kind of frustrating that that information isn't available. But I did get a few of the splits, Robert. They mentioned at the start of the race, initially they were going to go for 56-second laps because the world record was about 56.9 per 400, 56.96. But then they decide to back off. They're going to say, okay, we're actually going to try to run 57s, and then we'll just have Jakob try to pick it up like he did at the end of his two-mile world record in Paris. And that actually worked out really well. I had Jakob at 400 was, I think, 57.0, basically. So it means he closed his last 1600 in 346.1, which is sick. And then I timed his last lap. I had it at 54.9. So he did pick it up. I think he was like technically right behind because the pacing lights, the first green light, that's world record pace or whatever they had it set to. But he ended up passing that with 200 meters to go. It worked out, I think, pretty much like he wanted it to do. He was like, get in the ballpark and then I'll just slam it home. And I'm becoming convinced this guy can run, you know, 55 seconds, 55 flat of basically any pace in any race. He's that good. He looked smooth. He looked strong in this one. Really impressive stuff to take down a record that El Garouche set 2 months after he set his mile world record at 343.13. So of the three LG world records, the 1500, the mile, the 2K, this is clearly the least prestigious. But, you know, it could well be that by the end of 24 or 25, Ingebrigtsen has all three because he's just looked so fit and he's only been getting better.
It was amazing. It was so impressive. And I've just put up the longest, those of you watching live, the biggest quote in the history of the quotes that you can put on the screen here. Check out these post-race comments. Have you guys seen these from the official Diamond League website? Jakob's confidence, arrogance is back. Here it is. Quote, it's always fun to break a record. This one qualifies as a world record and not as a world's best. I love it. He's just like us. He gets into the world's best world record. Shit. I know I was able to break this one, but I had some kind of virus 10 days ago, and I didn't really know how I'd be feeling today. So he's sticking to the virus excuse, people. However, I felt really good and ran a good race. So far, so good, folks. Now check this part out. To be honest, this record wasn't a difficult one for me. Sure, when you have to do it alone, it's really tough. But I got great help from the pacers. Actually, they were able to help me more than I expected. That'll fire some people up, those quotes. Easy record for him. Sticking to the virus. No, but in all seriousness, I think this record, you know, like, why would he just make up that he had a virus or a sore throat? I never thought that. Like, this isn't the guy that just makes up excuses. Like, he gets annoyed when he loses, but I feel like he was honestly sick. And the fact, John, I thought your point at Worlds, he didn't dominate the 5,000 before. He waited to the very last minute to go by a guy that couldn't even make the 1,500-meter final in Mokotir. So I think that validated the virus. And then today's performance to me validates the fact that he had a virus. Well, I guess you could say it doesn't validate performance because how could he run this well if he was sick 10 days ago? But today it's just like, this is peak Jakob. He was amazing. And this is really in his wheelhouse. Like, honestly, I think he's better at a mile than he is at 1500. 2000, certainly a lot better at that than 1500. I would have no concern that he would lose a 2000 at Worlds. Like, you put Jakob in a 2000 against Josh Kerr, it's not even going to be close. He doesn't need rabbits. He's just going to run away from these guys and break them. 1500, he's significantly more vulnerable than a 2000. So great race by Jakob. I love the comments afterwards. Confidence, arrogance, whatever. He deserves it. He's had an amazing summer. Amazing summer. Like, world's best at 2 miles, world record at 2000, won every single race except for one, 5,000 gold, 1500 meter silver. This guy is. We just should really be appreciative that we have him in the sport. He races all the time. And that doesn't mean just like July and August. That means world indoors, European cross country, sometimes world cross country. So just amazing run today. And, you know, Josh Kerr, if you're listening, don't duck out. People are already saying in the message board that you're ducking out on the Diamond League final. If you don't show up there, that's how I'm going to view it.
Yeah, Kerr needs to run the Diamond League final. I hope he will. I mean, he's going to the Fifth Avenue Mile this weekend. So hopefully that's a stopping over point on his way to Eugene. I will say the other thing, the reason I didn't think Jakob would get this world record is how many athletes have we seen? Hey, you take on a big, heavy workload at Worlds and then you're a little flat for the next race or two. Especially a guy who says he was sick at the World Championships. Now, we did have some pretty good performances tonight. I mean, the women's 1500, we had women who were running Worlds there and they ran faster. But so, you know, I guess Jakob had enough time to recover. I think it's smart he didn't run Zurich. It would have been nice to see him race car there, but he probably wasn't ready to go. But he's been running fast for months. I mean, like you said, Robert, he's running these early Diamond Leagues. He ran Rabat in the first weekend of June. He ran Oslo. He ran 3:27 in Silesia. And he ran the world record in Paris 2 months ago for 2 miles. And he doesn't really seem to be slowing down. So that's impressive that he's been able to hold that position. Now, we can relitigate Worlds. I don't know if we want to do that. It's not like he ran a awful race in the 1500. He closed pretty well. It's just Kerr closed amazingly. I think the way he lost that 1500, I've said it before, he ran the second lap in 58 seconds. You know, maybe 100% Jakob runs that in 55, 56 and makes it a 3:27 race and they win. I think it's impressive to keep going, to be running fast as consistently as he has all season, only one defeat all year. Granted, it was in the one race he wanted to win more than anything else. Let's go to Weldon. We haven't heard your voice yet on this race. What do you think about Jakob?
What I think, that was damn impressive. I don't know, man. It's crazy that El Garouche set this record before Jakob was alive, because I remember El Garouche. But eras change, right? I think the shoes are making the records a little bit easier. The pacing lights, for sure. It's a different ball game. I kind of like the pacing lights early on in the records. But the last 100 or so, I think when you know he's got it, I don't know. I go back and forth, because when it's really close, I like them chasing the light. But once he gets ahead of it, it takes out some of the drama. So the one thing, John, we are seeing a lot of these athletes, right, is the post-Worlds letdown. We didn't see it from two athletes today. Can we repeat? Sharika. Robert, can you say her name properly, please?
Sharika.
Thank you. I was listening to the podcast back the other day, and Robert says Sharika or something. I wanted to strangle the.
I've always called her Sharika.
Oh, now you know how I feel when I hear you guys call him Usain Bolt, who's been retired, one of the greatest athletes in the history of track and field, and we still can't consistently pronounce his name correctly.
But folks, don't think it's a racial thing. I don't know if it's Shalane Flanagan or Shalane.
Shalane Flanagan, Courtney Frericks. I mean, yeah, it's certainly not a racial thing. It's a Rojo thing.
But, ooh, good one, John. Couple of things. They both showed up. They both delivered. Whereas, personally, I'm going to post-Worlds letdown. I didn't compete or anything, and I've been exhausted for 10 days. But the good thing is, we got another meet, what, next Friday? Saturday and Sunday, right?
Saturday, Sunday.
Diamond League Final US. Noah Lyles is going to be there. It's great. And Fetzlaff's going to ask, is Jakob running in Eugene? We haven't had it confirmed, but Nike takes a lot of abuse in the sport because of the biggest dog in the sport. And with the top perch comes criticism. I think some of it's fair. I wish Nike had done a lot more through the sport to combat anti-doping, doping and that sort of stuff. But I'm assuming 100% Jakob will be there, because it's probably in his Nike contract that he has to compete at one meet a year where they want him to compete. And they say the Prefontaine Classic, you better be there. So thank you, Nike. There's no doubt to me he'll be there. Watch him, of course, now pull out right after this. But it's one of the best things about the pre-classic. Nike has the most might. Phil Knight built $100-200 million stadium there. The top Nike athletes, by and large, will be there. Thank you. Thank you, Phil Knight. Thank you, Nike. Whatever you guys do, we need more stars competing. Jakob can run the 5K. He doesn't have any points. He hasn't run a 5K all year. So if he runs, he's in the 1500. And Josh Kerr, please show up. You can take a payday at Fifth Ave, nice little vacation, and not show the Diamond League final. The more I think about it, I don't think he'll show up.
Well, here's the thing. Josh Carr doesn't have anything to lose by running this race. If he loses, are we going to... I mean, well, if he gets smoked by Ingebrigtsen in the pre-classic, do you think any less of that performance in Budapest? I mean, to me, Josh Carr was ready when he needed to be. He won the biggest race of the year. That's what people are going to remember. They're not going to remember him getting smoked in some pre-classic meet. It's the Diamond League final, but to me, my lasting memory is always, like, please tell me, what did Jake Whiteman do after the World Championships last summer? Do you guys remember? No, he won the World Championships. That's what we will remember.
There's a comment here. Will Niels Waros run the Diamond League final? Checking the standings here, he's in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He's tied for 12th place. Looking ahead, who won't run? If Josh Kerr is out, that puts him to 11th. Azzedine Habs? Has 12 points.
Where do you see the updated standings? I'm on their website and don't see him in 12.
Yeah, if you go to the Diamond League results page and click on results for each event, then if you scroll to the right, there's some tabs that says entry list qualification standings. So yeah, they have updated it. Yared Nuguse, the only American currently qualified for the Diamond League final. And you know, the more I think of it, this meet, I actually did enjoy it. Like Robert, I was saying at the start, Robert, oh, I was kind of thought it would be underwhelming, but the women's 1500 was awesome. I liked Elaine Thompson Hurrah. Looks like she's gearing up for another Olympic year Thompson ETH next season with her win in the 100. She looked really good. This 2K was good. The 200 was fun. The men's 800 was interesting. France might have a new phenom in that event. So overall, it actually was a pretty fun Friday afternoon.
I mean, you're getting spoiled. You're sounding like an old man. Like I didn't like it. All I needed was a few great races, and we got that. So, look, Niels Laros, we need to repeat things. A lot of people were at work today, didn't see this. Niels Laros was fourth in 4:49.68. Stuart McSwain had a great race. He hasn't run well all year, really. 4:48.77 for third. They all beat Garcia, Nordas, Kipsang, Sam Tanner, etc. But, look, in terms of Jakob versus Kerr at Prefontaine, it's a mile, which disappoints me. It's not the same thing as the 1500. I know it's always the Bowerman mile or whatever it's called. Like, John used to make fun of me for years. I said, look, if I had a runner at Cornell, and he told me the 1500 and the mile were very different events for him. And I agree that's true for Ingebrigtsen. Like, the 2000 is the perfect wheelhouse for him. So the extra 109 meters benefit him much more than they due to Josh Kerr. So even if he wins there, well, first of all, what I would really like to see at this meet is one, for Josh Kerr to show up. And then two, right at the start line, I want Jakob to walk up to the rabbits and point to the stands and tell them to get off the track. And just say, I'm doing it myself, and go up to Kerr and go, this one's for real. We're doing it right here, buddy. And then just to destroy him. And then flex the Nike swoosh in front of the Brooks Beast Man. So
that would be fun. I would very much enjoy watching that race. And I'm not sure how I would pick Jakob, but I don't know. We don't know how it would turn out. Look, Robert, your runner who said the 1500 miles are different events. I mean, it's just a ridiculous take. I don't even know why I would need to explain that. Here is the only difference between them. The mile starts on a curve and the 1500 starts on a straight. So in a championship race, it makes sense to run a 1500 because otherwise, you're putting the guys on some of the outside lanes or the inside lanes at a disadvantage. It's just a mess getting into position on that first turn. That's the only difference between these two events. Physiologically, you're not going to have someone, oh, yeah, I'm a great miler, but not a good 1500 runner. But if you're talking about getting in position on the first turn, that's the one difference between the two of them.
And it might be nice that it's a Diamond League final and we won't have, hopefully, 100 people in this mile. I've always said they should do a two-turn stagger in the mile. I mean, a one-turn stagger, but you have some people starting the outside box because there's too many people clamping into one all at once when they're trying to run. By the way, the person that told me that, John, it's not different for most of these guys, but if you're a pure, like, 1,000-meter specialist, and the guy that told me this, John, he's not some idiot. This is the former Ivy League champion in the 1,000 meters. He's got a PhD and an MD. This is a very smart person that told me that. Sam McKenzie, I love you. That might have been actually my first PEPS champion. So anyways, Jakob was amazing. 2000, you know, was great. Women's 1500.
Wait, real quick.
Rose Runner here in the comments says, is Hawker going to get the bye? Did you look into it, John? John is not the only one who can do research here. Yours truly has looked into this. Good news, Cole Hawker fans. Well, this we'll see. This will be a true test. Who does Nike view as the number one dog for every athlete? Because I'm going to read you guys the rules. National wild cards of the Diamond League Finals are permitted as follows. For all track disciplines, one male and one female athlete from the country in which the final is taking place can be offered a wild card, provided that their standard is adequate to compete at that level.
So Weldon, do we know, though, we already have one American in this race, Neguse. Does that mean the U.S. gets a bonus entrant, or is it only for events where they don't already have someone?
I'm not a lawyer, but I was going to ask that. So I was essentially getting it. My technical read is that for all events, you get a wild card. A wild card means an additional athlete, additional thing. If I'm playing with a deck of cards and I get a wild card, well, I don't know. If I already have
that,
a joke.
Reading what you just said, I would agree with that interpretation. And, you know, it's more fun for an American track fan to have Cole Hawker in the field. I don't know if the rest of the world would agree, but I'd enjoy seeing that.
All right, before we talk women's 1500, Daniel Black on YouTube wants to know, given Faith Kipyegon's seemingly easily broke the 5K world record, could Jakob do the same? He wants our insights. All right, everybody, think about whether your answer is yes, that would be a thumbs up, or down would be thumbs down, or no, would be thumbs down. And when I say 1, 2, 3, you have to reveal your thumbs. Is everybody ready?
Yeah.
If you put Jakob Immermans in a 5,000-meter world record attempt instead of in 10 days, good conditions. Are we talking Stanford perfect predictions or like Diamond League predictions? I'm talking like the normal Diamond League conditions, whatever the world record was last run in. I'm not talking Stanford at night type conditions. All right, ready, set, go. So those of you not watching live, Robert and Weldon have both put their thumbs down. John has put his thumb up. People in the chat, virtual chats, Patrick, thumbs up. Harkmog, thumbs down.
I mean, I'll say this caveat. I'm not 100% sure he would get it, but he ran 7:54 and made it look like a joke. He closed in 55. I think he can close in 55 off basically any pace. So you're going to get a few free seconds at the end of this record attempt. And I just look at what Cheptegei did in 2020. I'm like, if they set up that same kind of attempt for him in Monaco, and you've got paces through halfway, and then you've just got a pacing light. Jakob's insanely fit. If he's got the exact time to chase, I think he probably could do it. I mean, look, the guy ran 12:48 2 years ago. And I think he's in much better shape than he was 2 years ago for 5,000 meters and for 1,500, frankly, even though he won the Olympics that year and didn't win the world's last 2 years. I feel very confident he's in sub 1240 shape. I'm not 100% sure he's in sub 1235 shape, but I wouldn't be shocked if he got it. And I do think within a couple of years, if he couldn't get it this year, at least in a year or two, I think he will have the fitness, especially if he tailors. I mean, his training's already kind of 5K training anyway, but I do think within a couple of years, it wouldn't shock me if he took an attempt at the world record in the 5K and get it.
Pretty good arguments. I mean, based on his physiological testing, and didn't he say this? Didn't he recently say my best event? Well, I know he said before, he's like, I'm really a 5,000 runner. But didn't he say recently that his best event was the half marathon? I've always, go back and check the podcast archives. I thought at one point I said, based on the testing, he's like, what if he ends up being the half marathon world record holder? So 1,500 would not surprise me. Jakob, sorry for doubting you a little bit right there. I'm not sure why I said no. I want you to become the first man to do the following in the 5,000. After you defeat Kerr in the showdown without the rabbits, you say, I'm coming back to this track when the weather's good in a week at night under the lights, and we're going to set the pace lights at 60 seconds per lap, and I'm going to run 12 and a half laps, and I'm going to break 12:30. Now, actually, you'd probably want the pace lights to be a little bit behind 60, then you could kick, but that's my prediction. Jakob Ingebrigtsen will be the first human being to break 12:30 for 5,000 meters.
That's crazy when you put it that way, Robert, that it's just 60 seconds a lap for 5,000 meters. I mean, it's a nice round number. It's very elegant, but geez, that's fast. My God. they're not that far away. I mean, the world record for 5,000 meters will be under 12:30 by the time I'm dead. I'm pretty confident in that, which is kind of crazy to think.
All right, speaking of world records, Sharika Jackson, 21:48 today, is that the correct time?
That's right, Diamond League record, number 4 time all time, but only the number 3 fastest time of her career.
And she looked very serious at the end and kind of stuck out her tongue for a disappointment. I mean, she wanted the world record. It was the only thing she was going after. Before the meet, I thought there was no chance. I feel like there's a letdown for a lot of athletes. The 200 record's been there for, 35 years for a reason. But then I heard it was a new track. And warm Jamaican weather, as she said. I thought it might happen, but I still was betting against it.
And then Kenny Bednarik ran 1979, and he didn't even break 20 seconds of Worlds. So I was like, whoa, if this track's significantly faster, then she could do it. And I think there was one thing missing. And, you know, on the commentating, I was watching the international feed with Chris Dennis. He's like, everything's set up, new track, amazing athlete, amazing shape. But he said that right after the fact that he said there's no wind. So in his mind, no wind meant it's not going to be wind aided. In my mind, the fact meant no wind means no world record. So if he had a 2.0 wind, this might have been a world record. Well, not probably not, right?
It would have been close. I think the thing, clearly the Brussels track is very fast, and they might have something to do with the bends because they're a little longer, but well, I guess that does that really make sense for the 200? I don't know. They were talking about the Brussels bend all night on the broadcast. But I'm looking like, I think Hayward Field's actually the best place for her to do this, because the way Hayward Field is set up, like many of these meets, Budapest and Brussels, they're in big stadiums. You know, you've got bleachers and stands going around the whole track. It's hard to get wind in the stadium in that kind of setup. Hayward Field, you don't really have that around the whole side. The back, the north side of the stadium is mostly open, which means you can get a tailwind for either the first turn or coming into the 100 meters. And that's one of the reasons you can get these fast times at Hayward, because you can sometimes get a nice, generous tailwind. So the problem is, I don't know, is she going to be able to hold this fitness for another week? That's a lot of travel. Clearly, she's in amazing shape, but is she going to be able to deliver another really fast time 1 week later, after all that travel? I don't know. But if you can get like a, that's probably the best track for her to do it, right? Is a hot day in Hayward Field with a 2.0 tailwind, where you could actually get a tailwind because of the way the stadium's set up.
It'll be really interesting. I mean, I've never seen a track meet in Eugene in September. You know, I noticed when I was coaching at Cornell, the wind comes and, you know, it generally comes in the same direction, but it varies a little bit depending on the time of the year. Just looking up the weather, I mean, it's going to be like 84 degrees on Friday in Eugene. So hopefully somewhere on Saturday, that would be, you know, amazing. But check out the margin of victory in this thing. Like, second place in this race was 22:31. So she won by 0.83 of a second, which is just ridiculous. She was 0.99 up on third place, Jenna Prandini. And this is a Diamond League. So based on margin of victory, I thought she won. All right, women's 1500.
Wait, one more thing on this 200. I think you're right, John. Eugene's the place to go. Gabby Thomas has run 21:60 and 21:61 in Eugene. Two different years. I mean, one of those was into a headwind. That's crazy. I mean, for reference, she ran, I think, 21:80 this year at Worlds. That's like a good time. Yeah, 21:81.
Noah Lyles, 19.31 in the world's final last year. Sharika Jackson's fastest time of her career, 21:41 last year in Eugene. I mean, hell, you put 2009 Bolt in Eugene with a tailwind, that thing might be 19:0 in the 200.
Yeah, it's crazy. Even without the wind, I mean, Gabby Thomas ran faster. So I don't have any explanation, because the bends can't be any better than the Brussels bend, but maybe the track surface is slightly faster. I don't know. But whatever it is, and we've seen it more in the 200. We've seen some fast times in the 100, but not to the same extent.
Well, yeah, I mean, Elaine Thompson Herrera did run 10.54 there in 2021. But yeah, I think that might have just been because she was in ridiculous shape at the time.
Okay, I take back everything I said. Showing that. That is proof. And also the 100, I think if you look at like this year, I think some of the talent is slightly down or whatever. So you're not going to see these crazy times on the men's team. It's just not there right now. But we've seen Elaine Thompson run super fast in the 100 to pre. So I thought, end of the season, this thing's not going to happen. She was motivated today and came close. I think she'll be motivated again next weekend. So look out.
I've tried for 20 minutes to get us to talk about the women's 1500. Can I do that now?
You have permission.
Well, the medalist, if I remember in Budapest, I don't even remember who the third medalist was, John. Faith Kipyegon won it. Hassan got a medal, right? Who was third?
Hassan was third, I believe, and Dariba Welteje of Ethiopia was second.
So they were not in this one. But Laura Muir ended up beating Ciara Magian of Ireland. 3:55. Ciara Magian. God.
Watching that one's fine, Robert. I have no
it's that one's more difficult than some of these ones that there's a clear pronunciation, but go ahead.
Anyway, they were well clear of everybody. 3:55.34, 3:55.87, Nelly Chepchirchir, 3:56.93. And then after that, for most of the race, I was trying to see where this blonde teenager from the U.S. was, Addie Wiley. One time I got a little bit confused and got her confused with Australians. John, did you have the same problem I did?
Final turn. I thought she was in third place. I'm like, is she going to run like 3:56 or 3:57?
Okay. Thank God, John. It was exactly. This is why it's fun to watch. I was like, they were shifting between like close ups and far away. And I was pretty sure I knew where Wiley was. Maybe it was a certain place on the screen. Then they did a close up and then they went back to the other shot. And I looked there. I was like, oh my God, she's moved up to third. And it was somebody else. It was not her.
It was Jess Hull. Yeah.
So Jess Hull must have faded at the end, I guess, because Hull ended up fourth in 3:57.75. And then I realized, no, that's Jess Hull. But anyways, Addie Wiley, the American teenager who ran 1:57 earlier in the week, had run 4:03 early in the year, I think was like fifth at USA's. I mean, everyone was expecting a sub-4 based on her recent 800. I'm very impressed by, she was like aggressive in the middle of the, like at the start, like she didn't just sit in the back. Like, she sat in the back maybe for the first bit, but then she moved up and was really, I thought, quite aggressive for a teenager. This wasn't like Alan Webb just sitting in the back and then picking everybody off. I mean, she was kind of running some extra ground, trying to get in the pack. But after the leaders came through, I started counting like 1,001, 1,002, 1,003. And then I saw Addie Wiley and Sinclair Johnson like cross the line basically together with Johnson, like it appeared to me like getting past Wiley. And I'm like, oh, Sinclair made sure she beat the teenager, but no. And I thought they didn't break four. I thought they were like four flat. And then I must have miscounted because Sinclair was gaining on Wiley, but Wiley beat her at the line. 3:59.17 to Johnson's 3:59.19. So now Addie Wiley is the fastest collegian in U.S. history. That record had stood for 15 years. To Jenny Simpson, who ran 3:59.90 at the Prefontaine Classic. John came up with this stat. No one has come within 6 seconds of that mark in the NCAA season. But and the only the previous closest mark outside of the season was a 4:01 that I think actually Jess Hull ran, right?
Yeah, 2019 Worlds. This whole collegiate record thing is all kind of fuzzy. And obviously this is September and it's a new school year starting. But look, what you need to take this – this is just how crazy it is. I know they've got the technology and the pacing lights. This was in a Diamond League, just like Jenny Simpson, so those things are the same. This was her Diamond League debut. I mean, it's super impressive. Addie Wiley, she ran like a vet at this race. She ran like she belonged at USA's, and it's basically because she does. I mean, she was fifth at USA's. She beat two of the people who made the world championship team from the United States, including one of the finalists, Corey McGee. She beat them both tonight in Brussels. So very clearly, she's one of the best in the United States in this distance. But Jenny Simpson, she ran that time 3:59. That was just one of the, I thought that's all right. This is unbreakable. Jenny Simpson, freak talent, phenom, is the greatest American miler ever. World champion, Olympic medalist, two other world medals, just an all-time great. I was like, this is Jenny Simpson running this as a 22-year-old senior. No one's touching this record. And now Addie Wiley, who was 3 years younger than Simpson when she ran her time, she's 19, has done it, and she's done it while training in an NAIA school. It's just crazy to me that someone has run faster than Jenny Simpson. It's not some, like, you know, major conference star or some, you know, import from another country who's just 25 years old. It's a 19-year-old from some NAIA school.
Well, yeah, but John, that's dishonest. This is a 19-year-old that set the U.S. junior record in the 1600 that had a full ride to Colorado and turned it down to stay at home.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, look, clearly she's a phenom, but it's just, I'm kind of shocked that anyone broke this record because, again, no one's even come close. America's had good 1500 runners since Jenny Simpson came along and before Jenny Simpson. No one at the level of Jenny Simpson. She's the best, but, you know, no one was even close to this time. For someone to break it, it's just, I thought that collegiate record, or whatever you want to call it, I thought no one would surpass that time for another 20 years.
Oh, come on. Happened. That's ridiculous. Maybe at the time, when it did almost last 20 years. But first of all, I can tell you why it would be beaten. Despite her accomplishments in the 1500, I don't really view Jenny Simpson as a prototypical 1500-meter runner. She, up for most of her college career, she was a 5,000-meter runner. She's not that fast. So this is the type of woman that would do it. But, you know, to compare the eras, it's kind of crazy how it's just changed. I mean, Morgan Eucene, who was at Cornell when I was there, was number one in the world. And I don't think she ever broke 4 flat. Check that out if she ever did or not.
She didn't.
Yeah. And, you know, when Jenny Simpson ran that time, 3:59.9, that year there were, this is going to be up on our written recap of the meet, only 7 women broke 4 flat for the whole year. This year, 23 had done it before today, so at least 24 women have done it, including 9 in this race. So when you factor in the fact that she's got good 800-meter speed, but give all of that improvement cannot be the super shoes, I don't think. Like, there's just so many running. It kind of reminds me of the conversation we were having on the regular podcast on Tuesday of, like, what's changed? Like, why aren't the Kenyans dominating the men's 1500 anymore? Like, why are the Americans so much better? There's so much more depth. And, you know, one of the ideas, well, this wouldn't apply to Addie Wiley, though, is, like, Weldon Johnson, when he went to Flagstaff 23 years ago, was, like, one of, like, 5 people training in Flagstaff. Now everyone's at altitude training. Everyone's doing threshold training, you know, stuff like that. But just a super, super run. And, you know, the question for me with Wiley is what happens after this? She likes to race. I'm pretty sure she's never going to run for Huntington University again. So I do think she's going to go pro. But, you know, you got the Pan Am Games, which is an option. I think that's in October or November this year, which is crazy. But I've put this tentatively up in the recap. I don't know. John's read it. I don't know if Weldon will allow us to publish it. But I said it will be a surprise if Wally doesn't go pro after this run, and it'll be interesting to see where she ends up. We imagine most shoe companies will insist she leaves her current setup in Indiana. As fair or not, it leads to constant questions regarding the validity of her exploits. Most people believe Addie Wiley is still coached by longtime family friend and former Huntington coach Lauren Johnson. Lauren is still married to Nick Johnson, who has been banned for life for safe sport for sexual misdeeds and has been known to give his runners injections of unknown substances, which past runners have alleged to be PEDs.
Yeah, I think you laid it out there, Robert. That's what we know about the situation. And I think there is going to, like, as long as she is in Huntington and has close ties with Lauren Johnson, fair or not, people are still, they're going to wonder. And I think for a shoe company to be confident in giving her the large contract that her performances merit, I think they would just want to say, hey, we don't want any questions. We just want to get you out of this situation. We want to get you somewhere where we think you're going to be more comfortable and where those questions, you can kind of put them behind you.
Yeah, and I do think the questions are fair, because, you know, but because what's happened here is very unusual. I mean, we have seen people in other sports turn down mega offers and go to some minor school. I mean, it happened with Colorado football. I mean, the guy, the Shadur Sanders, and the number one recruit in the country went to Jackson State because they like Deion Sanders. I know Addie Wiley thinks very highly of Gordon Johnson as a person and says she's been instrumental in her life. But just the reality is, if she's going to continue to associate with them in a professional capacity, it's going to lead to these questions. And I will say this, because I was very, very hard on Christian Coleman when he almost got suspended for the drugs and then came back. I said he needs to really take this seriously because people are going to have doubts. I'll say the same thing to Addie Wiley. If Addie Wiley goes to a pro group next year and doesn't run as fast and never is at this level again, and I know we have a number of teenage women whose bodies changed and they're never, you know, Mary Kane is a great example. They don't hit this level. But if she doesn't come close to this level in the future, I'm going to be much more looking back, highly suspicious about what went on now. But to be honest right now, do I think she's on drugs? No, I do not.
Yeah, there's still a lot to unfold in this situation, but this, I mean, this performance, it's hard to overstate how incredible it was for an American teenager to be running this fast. I mean, Mary Kane did make a world championship final as a teen, as a junior, finishing her junior year in high school, in fact, but she never ran 359 in high school. So she never ran 359 in her life. So it's pretty, yeah, to be up there contending with the Diamond League, to be one of the best in the country right now, it's nuts.
Yeah, do you guys know Mary Kane's PB?
403, I believe.
404.
404.
I mean, it's just different era. One, it shows the era. Two, she made the final. I think Super Shoes might make those somewhat equivalent. But that's the thing with Addie Wiley. This performance is phenomenal, and we don't lead the podcast with it. I think it's human nature. As Robert said, I don't think she's doping, but there's this, I don't know, penumbra. Is that the proper use of that term here? Overhanging there.
So, shadow? Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're not sure what's going on. So you suspend a little disbelief. But this performance on its own is absolutely astounding. And the 157, I'm actually more impressed with, but some equivalency charts kind of have these about the same. We said the IAAF scoring tables had said just slightly over 4 flat. That should have been 359, so that would be even better today.
Yeah. Rose Runner has an interesting question on YouTube. Does this make Wiley the favorite to win the 1500 in the U.S. next year, U.S. champs next year? I think she's more likely to win the 1500 than the 800 at the trials, but she has a better chance to medal in the Olympics, the 800 than the 1500. Whoa, 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 whoa. We're talking about Addie Wiley medaling next year? No. No, 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 no. Look, her time in the 800 is like 8th in the world, which is super good. I guess if one of the big three gets hurt, there would be a medal to be taken, but like she's a 1500 meter runner. The way she runs that event, it's kind of like Laura Moore. Laura Moore just won a Diamond League. Do we think she's going to medal in 800? No. So I don't think she's medaling in either, in any event.
No, but I get what he's saying here, because the 1500, you say, okay, well, she's just not running. But I'm trying to think, like, she just ran 359. Like, Kip Yegon, obviously, she's not beating her. She's probably not beating Hassan if Hassan's there. You know, Laura Muir was offering. I'm just trying to think, like, what kind of shape would you need to be in the 1500 to get a medal? Probably like 355 shape, 354 shape. It'd be pretty hard for her to get there. But if the 800, I think you'd need to be in like 156 shape. And there's three real studs there. So, I don't, yeah.
I mean, the fact we're talking about her medaling shows how far she came. She went 411 last year and I think 204. Now she's a 359, 157 woman. She beat the top. Two of the top U.S. runners today. I mean, there could be, like, heading into the trials, right? She could be the favorite for the USA 1500 next year. That is so unbelievable nuts. And I think in my book, she now needs to do everything possible to show she's clean. So it's so unfortunate, right? Like, this stuff's around her. Like, let's give her the benefit of the doubt, say she's clean. By no fault of her own, she was a kid. She just happened to be associated with these coaches where these terrible things happened, allegedly, to other people, and these people are your coaches. What are you supposed to do? Like, there's, you know, it's such a difficult situation. But now, especially if she wants to go pro, she has an opportunity to get out of there, and she needs to realize what people think maybe she owes them nothing and just what the performance is on the track talk, but try to do everything possible to show you're clean. Brian Way says, I suppose she was tested today. Is this the first time? No, she's been tested before. I've seen posts on the message board saying when she was tested before. So, you know, an athlete at her level's probably been tested throughout this year to some extent, but now she'll be tested more and more, which is a good thing. That's what we want. Like, we want these performances to be clean, but for people who question them, I can see why. We haven't just, even without this association, some people are like, oh my God, like a 19-year-old American's improved this much? Like, when I dropped my 10K time a minute 20 seconds, people said I was on drugs. So it's just, I mean, she's a factor now. Like, I mean, you're Corey McGee. You just got beat by her. Post-world's letdown? I'm sorry. No, you shouldn't let that happen.
Yeah. One way I was thinking about, maybe, I mean, people could view, I guess, Lauren Johnson as a victim of Nick Johnson as well, although she's still married to him. There could be some Stockholm syndrome going on there. Oh, God, this whole thing is just so messy. Look, one thing about this Corey McGee, and we're talking about, you know, Mary Kane making the world championship finals but never broken four. That's still happening now. Corey McGee has made the world championship and Olympic final in each of the last 3 years, 2021, 2022, and 2023. She's still never broken four. Now, she'd ran that 418 mile, which was equivalent to like a 358, but she fades to 402 and was next to last today. So, you know, the fact that there were, you know, as I said earlier, there's like 23 people in the world that have broken, that had broken four coming into today. So now it's at least 24. But when you limit it to like three per country, it's more like 15 or 16. So to get in the final, you know, you can do it as like a four flat type person, you know, making on our good days, like a 358, 359. That's actually, to be honest, that's kind of where Addie Wiley is right now. I mean, she was ninth in this race, right? You put in the three medalists and the good Ethiopians. I mean, the Ethiopian that was in this race that was ahead of her didn't even make the finals of Worlds.
Yeah, well, no, it was. I mean, Corey McGee, remember, there was one semi where it took 3:57 to make the final. There was McGee's semi where it didn't. So if she was in that one, could she run faster? Maybe, but she also might not have made the final if she was in the other semi.
I thought this was a great race for Laura Muir to get the win, to run what was the time, John?
3:55.34, which they were talking about, you know, the pacemakers going out really fast. They backed off the pacers, but the pace was hot in this one. I mean, it was 2:05 through 800. That's very fast. The main pack was a little bit off of that, but yeah, Muir took over with about, she started to separate with about 500 to go, 4:50. She made her move to the front and, you know, classic Laura Muir, just long drive to the finish. I thought it was a nice little flip from last year. Remember, last year, Kira McGeehan upset Laura Muir, had this huge breakthrough, won the Diamond League race in Brussels. We were all like, what the hell just happened? And this year, it's the two of them again, 1-2, but the order's flipped. McGeehan, great race for her again, 3:55.87. She took almost a second off her Irish record from Worlds. That's only good enough for second because Muir follows up her big win in Zurich with another win here today.
But I didn't like how, I mean, I've heard this in the last several broadcasts. They act like Laura Muir is having the worst season ever. Like, it's been a difficult season for her. I mean, maybe they mean like because she dumped her coach and adjusting to new things, but she's not like she's run horrific. She was sixth in the world. I guess, you know, when you're the Olympic silver medalist, that's not good. But I just think it's when I talked to her at Worlds, she was the happiest sixth placer. Considering she's medaled in the past, she's like, I just can't wait to start training for next year. Like, she's in a happy spot. There's joy in her life. She's happy to have a new coach and to have that pastor. And she just seemed, or she, I don't know if she's coaching herself, what's going on. But she's excited to get going for next year. And this is the third fastest time she's ever run. So, good job, Laura.
Yeah, she's with Steve Vernon now, so she does have a new coach. But that was very evident. She felt like she's in a much better spot, happier to be at these championships than I was stressful for her anymore. All right, let's wrap up a couple of these other events we haven't talked about yet. Men's 800, you didn't have the big guns. So there was no A-Rop, no Wen Yunyi. Bryce Harper was in this race. I didn't even realize that, honestly. Did you see Bryce Harper for 1 second of this race, Robert? I was watching it. I couldn't remember him doing anything. But he was the results tell me he was sixth at 144.37.
I missed the entire race because it was right after the 200 when I picked up my son. And then I came back because I thought it was going to be I kept waiting for it to come on the TV. So it must have been between the school and here. And I was like, wow, they must have run it right after the 200. And they did. I went back and watched it and watched the final like 600 meters of the race. And no, I didn't notice him. I did notice him in the results. So I knew he was there. But it just kind of reminded me. I'm like, man, like the U.S. women are amazing at the 800. The men, I know Hoppe was fourth in the world, but I hate to say it, Bryce, because I think he's a good guy. I don't see how he ever medals in this event.
Well, I think Ben Patterson medaled, so I can see how he medals. But
that's a good point. It's
hard, you know, unless you're one of the very clear top dogs, which is what Wanyonyi's become. And I think Wanyonyi and A-Rop, you know, they've got great chances. And then most of the rest of the guys, it's like if everything breaks right, maybe it can happen for you. This race was interesting for a couple of reasons. One, I mean, mainly involved the pacemaker. The second pacemaker, Collins Kipruto, on the back straight, he gets passed by this guy, Yanis Mezian, 21-year-old French guy, ran 143.94 PB. Gets second place. Very impressive run by him. But as Kipruto's stepping off, he's kind of just like drifting out towards the back, to the side, instead of going. Robert, are you trying to talk to me?
I'm mouthing stuff to the fans. I'm saying Ravens, baby. I've got a Baltimore Ravens logo.
Okay, all right. You're confusing me. Anyway, normally in this situation, you just step off to the infield. You get out of people's way. But Kipruto, this was on the back straight where people like to make their moves and come up on the outside. He just sort of drifts off and doesn't realize he's running right into Jamel Sajadi and Sliman Moula of Algeria. And Moula had nothing the last 100. He ends up dead last. But Sajadi, both of them were affected. They kind of got thrown off. There was a little bit of a collision. Sajadi didn't really seem to be affected all that much, though, because he winds up winning this thing in 143.60. It just made me think, one, that's an impressive result to do that. You only get one move in the 800. His move was thrown off by this pacer screwing up, and he still was able to win. Second, impressive run by Mezian in second, the 21-year-old Frenchman. Third, look, pacer, you have two jobs. One, set the correct pace. Two, don't get anyone's way. And he failed the second one. I also don't understand. He was the second pacer in this race. Why do we even need two pacemakers in a Diamond League 800? We don't. We need one. You can take them through 400 and then you step off. So, yeah. A messy race, but didn't affect Sajadi all that much because he still got the win.
Yeah. Someone's like, there's no excitement for the men's 800 for the U.S. Now, if we get Donovan Brazier back, there'll be a whole lot of excitement. That would really make the event. He's never made an Olympic team. I hope he's just healthy enough to at least give it a try. And I'm still
holding
on.
That's what he said when I talked to him in March. He said all he wants is a shot, Robert. I think that's all that everyone wants from him.
Okay, a few other things. Rose Runner, you refer to Rose Runner, who is often on the live shows, as a he. I've always assumed Rose Runner is a she.
Yeah, I actually did jump to a conclusion there, so I don't know 100%. Maybe I should just, I don't want to call Rose Runner it. I should just call Rose Runner Rose Runner, or they can
Rose Runner
what gender they identify as in the
we don't want to know your I don't want to that's a personal thing. I don't care what gender they are. Rose, can you please tell us what sex you are, male or female? I've always assumed it was a woman, and I like the fact that we had like a loyal live listener that was a woman. So anyways, Rose Runner, I haven't seen if they put anything in the YouTube comments. I got a text after the 1500 from a journalist saying choppy and clumpy 1500, or Wally goes faster than 3:59. I kind of agree with that. Like, it wasn't the smoothest of races. It was kind of some bumping. You know, you often see this, particularly on the men's side. There was some bumping, visible bumping at the beginning, and she ran some extra distance. I thought she just handled herself very well for someone who's like, this is her first time on this stage. So
Rose Runner has shattered your illusion, Robert. Confirms diehard track fan, male.
Oh. I guess it was just me assuming with the Rose.
Yeah, I mean, it could be like Rose City or sort of thing, or maybe their last name's Rose. I don't know. Lots of different possibilities there. Okay. Women's 5,000. Robert, this is your time to brag all about Nozomi Tanaka if you want. It's interesting because it came down to Lillian Rangaruk of Kenya and Medina Issa, the world junior champion from Ethiopia. They kind of dropped everyone. But then I'm looking at the bell and suddenly Tanaka is coming up and she's closing them down. I'm like, what's going on? Shouldn't they be running away? Shouldn't they be kicking? But they were kind of screwing around. They let her into the race. She almost beat Medina Issa. I think she may have even passed her on the home straight, but got passed back. I don't know. It was a good battle for second. Rangaruk, who a number of people have noted served a 10-month doping suspension, came back and wins it 14:26. Issa second, 14:28. And then Tanaka, who started the year with a 14:58 PB, ran 14:37 in the semifinals at Worlds, and now 14:29, second straight Japanese record in the 5,000 meters, gets third place. So anything you want to say about this race, Robert?
Sorry, I was on the message board reading comments. Well, I love Tanaka. She ran the 8, the 15, and the 5,000 last year in Eugene, I think, or was that the Olympics? Made the Olympic final in the 1500 and was setting national record after national record in that event. But yeah, it was weird. Like I think it's because Issa, who is the world junior champ from last year, right? I think Issa's run 14:16.
I mean, Tanaka, let's remember, Tanaka is a former world junior champion too in the 3,000 meters.
Is she really?
Yeah.
Wow. So, you know, Issa would just. She was leading the race, but she clearly didn't have much left. And that's why Tanaka just started her kick and gained on them. I was kind of worried by that, like Issa's finish. Like, it was so bad. I don't know if she ended up second, but I'm like, oh, is this woman going to be like a – I guess she's so young. Like, is she going to be a world record holder moving forward? Because when I saw her, when I realized who that was, 18 years old, 249 days, sixth at Worlds, last year's world junior champ, I'm like, oh, this is going to be her first Diamond League win. And I was really starting to pay attention because I, you know, didn't really pay much attention when she got third in Stockholm earlier in the year, fourth in London, even though she ran 14:16 in London, but she was way back. So she got blown away. Tanaka got away. But this Rignarik person who was 10th at Worlds, I'm kind of curious about this thing because people point out correctly that she served a 10-month ban. But in my opinion, you don't get a 10-month ban unless – they think that there's a good explanation for it. So I made a post on the message board, and I'm not sure if anyone's had time to respond yet, but I heard about her 10-month suspension. I started Googling around about it, and I found an article on the BBC, and it says, well, first of all, she was suspended for the following drug, letrozole. And it says, which is a hormone therapy drug. What does that mean? So I don't know what the drug's even used for. But the AIU issued a statement and said, taking into consideration how promptly the athlete admitted the anti-doping rule of violations upon notification, the parties agree the period of ineligibility shall be backdated. So, but backdated, wouldn't it normally be 4 years? So, there's a lot for me to learn about that. You know, if it's some young teenager taking something that teenage girls would take, I can understand it. But the fact they said, oh, she promptly admitted it, so we're going to give her 10 months. I mean,
seems yeah, not all doping suspensions are created equal. I mean, it's never brought up. Shelly Ann Fraser-Pryce served a 6-month suspension for oxycodone. She said it was for a toothache, which I tend to believe. But when I see like a 10-month suspension, I think of it differently as a 3 or 4 year suspension. But yeah, she was banned, and you know, we don't know all the details of the case. I think it's fine to mention it, but it's also worth mentioning it's not a 4 year EPO ban.
But my other take in this race was a depressing one. I don't even know what the actual time is.
Well, Elise Cranny, she was 11th in 14:57. This is just it's an odd season to me, Robert. Maybe it's just she's been training for the 1500 all along. Like, she seems to enjoy it more. And she had the endurance to just sit and kick on Alicia Monson at USA. Sorry, she had enough endurance to sit and kick on Alicia Monson at USA's. But then when she gets in these more 5K type or races where we saw at Worlds or here in Brussels, she might not have the endurance to hang around, because her best races of the season, they were the two sit and kicks at USA's, and there was the 416 miles she ran at Monaco. I'm just wondering, maybe she was banged up. I mean, she didn't really race that much this year. She ran one race in 1500. Sorry, she didn't race that much before USA's. She ran 1500 in April, and then she ran that disastrous 5K at UCLA. I'm just thinking maybe she doesn't have the endurance to hang in some of these longer races, but she does have the speed to succeed in the 1500 or in kicks at the moment.
Jay Scotty, man, makes a good comment on YouTube. Cranny went with a lead pack at 14:18 pace. The outcome was hardly surprising. I'll add, on like an 80-degree day, right? I mean, even at the end of the race, it was probably 75.
Yeah, it was hot. Yeah.
That's true. And it's amazing to me that as good as she is. Now, what did she run for 10,000 last year, John? She almost got the record.
30:14.
So I don't know how her 5,000-meter PB is only 14:48. But look, she wanted to run the 1,500 USA's. Jerry convinced her to run the 5 and the 10. She won both. If I'm her, she's already made an Olympic team, right, John? If I'm Jerry, then she might back off. I train her like a 5,000 and 10,000 runner all through up about March and April. And then next year, I let her run the 1,500. She may not make the team, but that's what she loves. She's not going to medal. And I was kept thinking, oh, we're getting a slow race. She's got a sick kick. She's going to medal in the 5 or 10. Now, I don't think she's going to medal in the 1,500, but this is a woman that ran a 4:16 mile. Like, it's not out of the question, right?
If you're going to have her run the 1,500, why don't you just train her like a 1,500 runner?
Well, I just think she's gotten a lot better. I mean, one comment I wanted to say, like, was look at Sinclair Johnson. What did I say? What was my concern? She had a great year last year, a breakout year, and I thought, is she benefiting from the strength work she did with the Bowerman Tri Club? She's going to have a big bump in performance the first year under Pete Julian, and then she's going to regress. And it looks like that's what happened. Now, I've seen some quotes from her recently. She's like, I know I need to work on my strength, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I forgot who I was talking to one time about, you know, I was talking about Sinclair and the Bowerman, why it wasn't a good fit. And the thing was, like, Jerry's, yes, she's tired, probably complaining about it, but Jerry Schumacher is not training anyone in that group to run what Addie Wiley did today, 3:59. He knows to be competitive at the world level, you need to run 3:54 or 3:55 or better at a minimum to be a medal contender. And that's what he's trying to get them to do. And I saw somebody ripping Jerry, like, he supposedly, someone said he's going to redshirt Connor Burns and these guys are not all American level. He does kind of have a mindset like, if you're not at this level, what's the point? So, yeah, I just think the strength work is good. You get stronger, you're working your base. She could train the way everybody else is training in the group and then shift down to the 1,500. Hell, she could quit the group. I'll coach her. 1,500 meter training is very easy once they're fit. So, Elise, altitude training with Jerry. When the track season comes, move to Baltimore. Hell, I'll fly out to wherever you live once a week.
No, look, Jerry can coach her to a good finish at the 1,500. Hey, and Robert, she could make the team. I remember last year, Carissa Schweizer ran the 1,500 at USA's, and she got fourth. And I think Elise Cranny is a better 1,500 talent than Schweizer. She almost beat Nikki Hiltz right after Hiltz won the U.S. title in the 1,500 in that mile in Monaco. So, doing 5K, 10K training, she might be able to make the team, but she could also train like a 1,500 runner and try to make the team. But yeah, maybe Jerry would have her try to run a little faster than she might be able to. I don't know. All right, couple other events. I mean, do we want to hit anything else from this meet? I feel like some of these runs, the women's 400, I'd never heard of this woman. Cynthia Bolingo won a Diamond League, native Belgian. I mean, great run for her, but apparently she'd broken 50 seconds before. I'd never heard of her. Femke Bol got the win in the 400 hurdles, as expected. Pretty fast 200, like you said, Benerick and Zonnell Hughes. Andre DeGrasse creeping back into shape, 1989. Season's best for him. So that was kind of fun to watch. To me, the most compelling sprint result outside of Jackson was Elaine Thompson-Herah winning the 100, 10.84. We've got a commenter here. Jordan Jordanis mentioning ETH got a real coach. Immediately, she's running 10.8 low again. I mean, this is, she's had some strange seasons throughout her career. Elaine Thompson Herah, you know, she's got 4 Olympic gold medals individually and 0 at the World Championships. And some, you know, she said she's had this injury, this nagging injury she's been dealing with basically for years. I think it's the hamstring or knee, somewhere in there. But she was 5th at the Jamaican Championships this year. This is the reigning double Olympic champion, couldn't even make the team. Then she runs 11 flat and 0, 10.92 Bellinzona, now 10.84. And yeah, it is worth noting, you know, she dumped her old coach, Stephen Francis, after the Olympics and started being coached by her husband. Now it sounds like she's back with a, you know, different sprint coach and she is running well. I think that's going to be fascinating to see what she does at the pre-classic. If she runs it, I don't know if she has the Diamond League points to get in, but I can look at the standings. And then specifically next year, going for the three-peat will be fun. It looks like Thompson Herah, she is the first person out currently from the Diamond League final, but she would only need one scratch to get in.
Can you pay someone to scratch? Because she could be competitive in that thing. It's like, hey, I'll give you, whoever's going to get 8th, I'll give you $5,000. Someone, actual random, is defending her husband, saying Elaine Thompson Herah ran 10.79 last year under her husband, so today's result is not that much different.
Well, I don't want to speculate too much because I don't know the whole situation. All I do know is I thought it was very interesting that she left Francis after the Olympics.
So, well, I briefly went to the message board. People were saying, what event should Eddie Wiley run in 800, 1500 of the trials next year? Well, I assume you probably can do both the way the schedule will be set up. But B, well, if you can do both, then you do both, right? Because your goal has to be to make the Olympic team, particularly.
Yeah, but what if the 1500's second? Like, I think that's how the event I would have her run. If the 1500's after the 800, would you want to run 3 rounds of the 800 and potentially tie yourself out? TBD. The 1500's first, run both.
Okay, guys, I was secretly listening over the last 20 minutes of the podcast. If you have a wild card, you should be allowed to wild card whoever the hell you want. Why does that have to be from your country? Elaine Thompson Herah should be the 100-meter wild card.
Because then you reward people who...
Oh, skip the meet? Fine, whatever. But
here's the thing with that. People who are skipping the Diamond League, I mean, Thompson Herah wasn't up to her usual shape. But like, let's say a Thing Mo, a Sydney McLaughlin, the Vroni, say, hey, I want to run the Diamond League final. Or if the Thing Mo showed up and said, you want to run it, I just let her in. Like, we're not...
I wouldn't.
Okay, people would say, oh, you're rewarding them for skipping the Diamond League. Well, okay, but they're running this... Like, at least we're having them run a Diamond League as opposed to 0. So I don't like it, but in terms of making the meet more interesting, if a Thing Mo wants to run the Diamond League final, it's in the best interest of the sport to let her run it. She's not going to, but... For that example, yeah,
that sounds like the guy who invented the wild card for the world championship final. It's in the best interest of the sport for whichever American the trips of the trials to be in the world. So we're just going to give a bye to them. I don't like the bye. Get rid of it.
Yeah, they have wild cards, so I think it should be for whoever you want.
We need to do more.
No, while we're talking wild cards, I'm going to throw this question and leave it to you guys. Who's going to be the wild card in the women's 1500 meters? Come on, let's do it. Let's do it pre-classic. Eddie Wiley. Why not?
Well, the argument will be Nikki Hiltz is the U.S. champion if they want the bid. I mean, I don't know if the season's done at this point, but Wiley's running better than any American miler right now.
I mean, yeah, there's no obligation to pick anyone. I'm not sure Nikki will do it. Nikki's doing 5th Ave. So if people want to know 5th Ave predictions, Nikki's the huge headliner, as is Josh Kerr. Those are your favorites.
Well, Ellie St. Pierre, that's the most interesting thing
that's
to me.
That's the headline,
she
yeah.
gave birth earlier this year, and she's running her first race of the season. So I know right. Josh Kerr is the world champion, but Ellie St. Pierre making a return from pregnancy, that's a big deal.
And she'll get smoked. So what you guys think she's
going to
win?
You don't know that?
Yeah, I'll bet you right now. How much you want to bet? 3-1.
What's the bet?
3-1 odds. I'm giving you 3-1 odds.
I'd bet 10-1 she doesn't win this race.
What, okay, thank you. Say she has to win for me to win this bet, or she has to beat like Nikki Hiltz? She's not going to win the race. No.
Okay, you just said
3-1 is fair for Ellie St. Pierre in her first race coming back from pregnancy? That's a fair bet, Weldon? Come on, man.
You guys just acted like she was a favorite for this race.
I didn't
say she's
my a
point.
Favorite.
Thank
I said she's
much.
A newsworthy story. I can't believe this is the U.S. champion of the Olympic trials in 2021. She's coming back from childbirth. She medaled at World Indoors last year, and you're just like, oh, it's not even a big deal that she's running the race. Of course it's a big deal.
It's a nice human interest story she's in there, but it's not a competitive story, I don't think. Yeah, we'll find out,
I guess.
Know
that.
When did she get birth? When did she get birth?
Like it was well, in the winter.
It's not a competitive story for this year, but it's exciting for next year. She's my favorite for the Olympic trials for next year. Who controls these wild cards?
Actually, 6 months ago, she's got a chance.
March 4th, yeah.
Yours truly will be there. I was not there. I could have talked to her today in Harlem, but they're giving out shoes to kids. Couldn't make it. It was too early. They got to account for commuting time from the suburbs.
All right, supporters, club members, we love you. Thanks for being a member. If you want this as a podcast, you've got to join the supporters club. Go to the supporters club forum. I'm going to tell you how to get the NFL Sunday ticket for $100 a year. I do it every year. It may be technically illegal. I may have to post it under a fake name so I don't get sued by YouTube. But it's worked in the past when DirecTV had it. I assume it would still work this year. It involves track and field. I'm going to give you a hint. All you need to know is your favorite birthday of your favorite collegiate track and field star. And you're good to go on the student pricing.
Wait, does it work? They have student pricing, YouTube does?
Yeah, it's $100. I've done it for
Are
like
sure
five
they
or
have
six
it this year.
Yes, they do.
It went from direct TV to YouTube TV.
They have it. I signed up as Athing Mo 1 year. I think Cole Hawker another year.
Rory, you know that I love that he chooses a specific person's birthday as opposed to just any birthday in the range, but it's a nice little tribute.
No, you have to know their birthday.
No,
so
John, they somehow had the birthdays of college students. So you just look up a prominent one and put it in, and it's a birthday.
Oh my God. That's actually crazy.
You can look up like an NFL, you can look up a college church.
Nathan Green will be getting the Sunday ticket in Baltimore this fall.
YouTube executives, I'm just joking. I've never actually done this. This would never work. It was a comedy, sarcastic skit that I was just doing. Never done this. You should hire me to be your security guy, though, and I can tell you what other college kids might be doing. Rojo, what is your beer of choice tonight?
Wait, while we're praising YouTube TV, it is amazing. Drop your cable company. Go to letsrun.com/fiber. Letsrun.com/fiber. Oh. You can get gig internet. Support Let's Run. And then to watch TV, you use YouTube TV. It's amazing. John and I both have it.
No, don't go to YouTube TV. Google's getting too big. DirecTV streaming is great for me. You can get your local regional sports network while they still exist. I can watch all the Orioles games on there. I can't watch it on YouTube TV.
All right, guys. Well, that's going to do it for Brussels post-meet recap. I don't know what we're going to do next week for the Diamond League final. Should we just have a Friday 15? Or are we going to go live after both of these Eugene days one and day two? I mean, we don't usually have to deal with this, but day two is an NFL Sunday, and there's going to be games going on. So
no, you're kidding. I swear to God, I'm not going to watch the Diamond League final. I did not know that. It better not interrupt the Ravens game. What time is the meet, John?
I think the meet is from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern, right?
You've got to be kidding me. Oh, 3 to 6 Eastern. No, I'm not watching it. Ravens are at 1. You've got to be kidding me. I'm off next, guys.
Robert might miss the first hour. The Patriots have Sunday Night Football, so I'm going to be trying to wrap this up as quickly as possible. But best of luck to all of your teams this weekend. Cowboys Giants on Sunday night, Ravens Texans, that should be an easy win. The Patriots, we've got it hard. We got Philadelphia. Tom Brady's going to be in the house, but I'm not feeling good about our chances. I think Philly's better in pretty much every phase of the game. So yeah. And as for what beer I'm drinking, I was thinking of going to making a trip to Treehouse Brewery over the weekend and picking up some supplies for the fall, but I'm not sure if I'll be having one tonight or not. So all right, guys, thanks for tuning in, enjoying. Weldon's about to open his all-day IPA. So I hope, is that your first or second? I don't know, Weldon, but enjoy it.
I opened it up before the podcast started. Robert's ranting with his microphone not working. All right, everybody,